DW Africa Link.
Reports of renewed violence in northern Cameroon are raising alarm as Boko Haram insurgents resurface in areas once declared secure. In recent weeks, villages have been attacked, residents displaced, and the fragile calm shattered. So, what's behind this resurgence and how are local communities and authorities responding? That's what's coming up. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Boko Haram, the Islamist militant group originating in northeastern Nigeria, has plagued the Lake Chad Basin region since 2014. The Lake Chad area is a strategic border region between northern Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria. Years of joint military operations between these countries helped suppress the group's activity. However, recent months have seen a worrying uptick in attacks in Cameroon's far north region. Analysts suggest internal splits within Boko Haram, combined with shifting military pressure in Nigeria, may be pushing fighters back into Cameroon. But the violence is putting pressure on local communities, many of which were already struggling with poverty and past trauma. Joining me for this discussion is a security analyst, Dr. Remaji Hoinathi, and DW's reporter, Dorcas Ekupe, who is based in Cameroon. We'll start with you, Dorcas, as our eyes and ears on the ground. If you can just tell us more about the situation right now and how you came across the story.
The current situation is that there is an upsurge in Boko Haram attacks in Cameroon, not just in Cameroon, but in the Sahel region as a whole. And I came across the story from recent from observations and trends, you know, happening around, watching the news. And just in Cameroon, since March, there has been a rise in attacks. Let's start with what happened in Hile Alifa, here in northern Cameroon, where three Cameroonian soldiers lost their lives and several others were wounded. And it's not just there. We equally had another situation in Darak, an island locality, where the jihadists attacked the post there, but fortunately no life was lost, but they made away with their boat, you know, since it's an island locality and they mostly have boats for operations, and they also made away with weapons.
Now to you, Dr. Hoinathi, if you can also just give us the background to insecurity in Lake Chad region. Why is this so important geopolitically and for groups like Boko Haram that keep changing of tactics and recruitment by the group itself as well?
Mainly, we observe that upsurge in the far north of Cameroon, precisely in the Logon Eshari, and also in the Borno state in Nigeria. If we just, you know, consider March as a month, we observe more than 10 blunt attacks, mainly on military barracks, with a very clear objective, as we are observing, for Boko Haram, hitting very hard those military barracks by surprise and then taking away a lot of military equipment, weapons, and sometimes even cars. So it's a situation that we observe happening regularly, meaning mainly ISWAP, that is one of the two Boko Haram factions, is really back on the ground with clear objectives. That is consolidating its presence in Borno and Logon Eshawi, but also actually replenishing its arsenal in view of its extension project in other places in Nigeria, but also in the other Lake Chad Basin countries. In 2024, there have been this military operation by the four countries, the three countries, Chad, Cameroon, and Nigeria, the operation Lake Sanity 2, by the multinational joint task force. So this operation actually depleted Boko Haram from some of its bases, weakening the group in a way. And we then link this upsurge actually as a response of Boko Haram to such kind of operation, meaning there was a need consolidating such operations, but also sustaining them in the time to keep weakening the group as it should.
It looks like it's not coming to an end, but now it's in the Cameroon, or should we say in the Lake Chad region.
The Lake Chad Basin plays a very key role in the international jihadi architecture. When you consider Islamic State, the ISWAP faction actually is one of the main factions of the Islamic State in Africa. And the fact that this faction is situated in the Lake Chad Basin, that is close through Niger to the Sahel front, actually means the destabilization of that region can actually mean a lot for the world fight against violent extremism in the Sahel and in the other part of Africa. And we also know that since at least 2 years, there is a growing ambition of those violent extremist groups actually heading towards the coastal countries, talking about Benin and Togo actually are regularly hit by those groups, considering that those countries are in the continent between Nigeria and Niger to the ocean. It means that there is really actually a necessity for the countries in the Lake Chad Basin to ramp up the fight against Boko Haram, but also be ramping it up, there is a necessity of a broader collaboration, meaning the coastal countries, but also the countries of the Sahel Central that actually are gathered within the IS. There is a need for all those organizations to cooperate more, so to have transnational responses, but at the same time also transregional responses to a threat.
Right, right. Now, Doctor, if we can also touch on the pressure that civilians are experiencing in this time whenever we hear Boko Haram, it's worrisome, right? And also the pressure on the military itself. Let's talk about that.
Exactly. There are two factions of Boko Haram in the Lake Chad Basin. There is ISWAP that in its approach actually try to have a kind of heart and mind winning strategy, meaning trying in the occupied space to set state-like structures and sometimes trying to deliver social services, but most of the time preying on communities in terms of extortion and illegal tax collection. But then in its philosophy, ISWAP actually is very strongly targeting state symbols, meaning the militaries, the administrations, etc. But ISWAP can also actually hurt populations when they are not responding to its demands in terms of paying taxes, illegal taxes, or collaborating to its objectives. So this can also happen very regularly. So these are kind of punitive actions against communities. In the other hand, we have JAS. So that is the faction earlier led by Shekau. And we know that Shekau have this approach of undifferentiated violence on militaries, on administrations, but also on communities. So actually, the situation on the ground is that communities are entrapped, you know, in the middle, in terms of they don't want to collaborate with those groups, but they have, for survival sakes, sometimes to collaborate with those groups in terms of paying them taxes and collaborating to their objective. So the situation actually is very, very complicated on the ground, because ISWAP is putting pressure on the population so to oblige them to cooperate. And on the other hand, they are also putting a lot of pressure on military barracks, so also to show on the ground that they are the most powerful, whereas the necessity for the communities, if they want to survive, to collaborate with them. The fight against this group should have many components. The military components remain very important in terms of facing that violence. But at the same time, adding to this approach a kind of more community-centered, you know, strategy in terms of not hurting the communities when fighting Boko Haram, and also bringing in possibilities for the communities to remain resilient economically and socially to the calls of those groups to collaborate with them, meaning then more effective and strong state presence despite the pressure that ISWAP is actually putting on military barracks.
Right, right. But Doctor, how much of this fighting is actually attributed to Boko Haram versus other militias?
Actually, it depends on the zones.
Okay.
We know that in some parts of Nigeria, there are actually not really militias, but a lot of armed groups, those bandits that are actually also hurting communities very strongly. But then in zones like Logone Shari, actually, it's specifically Boko Haram that is the main actually perpetrator of the violence against the communities. In the past, there have been some intercommunal conflicts, but actually the main threat remain then the two Boko Haram factions in those zones.
Right, right. Now, coming to you, Dorcas, let's talk about the recent deaths and cases of instability, as you've been reporting on this story for a while now. Tell us about the current situation.
The situation is really complicated because we have seen an upsurge in the rise of attacks by Boko Haram and ISWAP. And we also noticed that in Nigeria, 20 soldiers died by ISWAP in an attack. We also discovered that some farmers, we had 40 farmers too, who died in Nigeria. So it's not just happening in Cameroon, it's happening in the Sahel region as a whole. And I got to see where the governor of Borno State, Babagana Zulum, was lamenting, you know, crying that the situation is really complicated.
And also a lot of this conflict, Dorcas, I'm asking you this, I also want Doctor to answer the same question. A lot of the conflict has been explained away through cattle raiding and local fights. But is there actually any, like maybe an ideology behind this violence?
Oh, well, you know, Boko Haram, you know, they want things to be done in the Muslim style, in the Muslim way. That's how they came about. And, you know, ISWAP, we had a breakaway fraction, ISWAP, Islamic West Africa State, who said no. They are not happy with the way Shakao was, you know, going about killing people, doing their things. And they said, no, we don't like this. This is not what Islam is all about. So they came up, you know, and from what I've observed is that they attack mainly Christians, you know, and the military. But of recent, they have been attacking civilians as well. What I noticed is that usually they say that when they attack civilians, this must be probably those who have disobeyed a law or probably those who maybe have planted in a farm that's not theirs but pertaining to the ISWAP committees.
Doctor, I don't know if you have anything to add then. Also want to say something on that particular question.
Exactly. I may nuance a little. When talking about ideology, it's very important to note that all those Islamist groups actually claim a specific conception of Islam that for them is more radical, is more pure, and then opposing it to the way people generally practice Islam. And when Boko Haram at some point paid allegiance to the international jihadist group that is Islamic State, they then adhere to Islamic State approach of the jihad. And for ISIS, it's very important in the fighting, not touching upon Muslims, not using women and children in the fighting, and organizing very professionally, you know, the military aspect of the fighting. And at that point, Shekau didn't compare to this approach because he has this approach to a kind of a differentiated violence against everybody on the ground. This is why there have been this splintering dynamic observed at some point. And then actually what we observe is that the violence actually is not only against Christians on the ground. They are the most targeted, but Muslim people are also very regularly targeted by Boko Haram, the two factions, when they have the impression that they are not cooperating, you know, to the aims that they at some point are giving intelligence to military, that they are not paying the illegal taxes that are imposed on them, etc. So it's a situation that actually is embracing all the communities that are in the Lake Chad Basin.
But we've also seen, like, especially Boko Haram in Nigeria, some of them were actually converted and they would go to the government, confess, and say they want to be better people. Are we seeing this as well in the Lake Chad region, Doctor?
Yes. There have been a lot of people that actually have been disengaging from Boko Haram in the world, four countries. Nigeria being the epicenter of the conflict, most of them actually disengage in Nigeria. But then we also have witnessed such dynamics in Cameroon, in north and far north Cameroon since long. We witnessed the same situation in Chad and in Niger. This is why the different countries actually have set some programs to keep offering possibility for people who want to leave Boko Haram to enter processes of rehabilitation and reintegration in the communities. Those mechanisms are facing some material and difficulties, but at least they are there as a sign from the different states of the witness to willingness to take out people that actually want to leave Boko Haram. And people are leaving Boko Haram for many reasons. You know, some of them have just been disappointed by the approach of Islam proposed by Boko Haram, kind of violence, a strong violence against everybody, something that disappointed a lot of people. And also, let us not forget the fact that many people actually join Boko Haram with economic agendas, not absolutely ideology or religion. They join Boko Haram as a way out, you know, of misery, of the difficult situations they are in. People also have been obliged to join Boko Haram because they have been kidnapped. They have been actually fooled by friends, etc. So a lot of people actually left Boko Haram, mainly those that have been taken in forcibly. So it's a dynamic that is observed, and I think more needs to be done by the different states to make those programs more attractive so that more people can leave the group.
Right. When you speak of economy, that some actually join, obviously, because of poverty or whatever they benefit from Boko Haram, Doctor, this question just ran to my mind. And I think it's a mystery. Who really funds Boko Haram? Where do they get their money from?
There are many sources of funding for Boko Haram. Let us not forget the fact that the Lake Chad Basin actually is per se a kind of paradox. It's a boundary region with some possibilities in terms of farming, fishing, but also animal husbandry. It's also a flourishing space of transboundary trade with the big cities of Nigeria like Kano, Maiduguri, etc. serving as the main markets. So goods would come from across the four countries and then from there take the route to Nigeria. So it was a flourishing economy, and Boko Haram actually managed to get inside that economy in terms of cattle rustling, in terms of imposition of illegal taxes, in terms of being part of distance boundary commercial activities. So most of the resources from Boko Haram actually are captured on the ground in terms of mastering a large part of this economy. Let us not forget the fact that at the beginning, Boko Haram has also been riding banks, you know, in Maiduguri and in some part of Nigeria. This is something that is very important to be added to. But beyond that, as Boko Haram is actually part of the international jihadi network, ISIS is also sending money to Boko Haram. And beyond money, they are sending a lot of economy and technical support in ways of developing weapons locally, etc. So economically, Boko Haram actually benefited from two sources: the international sources, mainly from the international jihadi networks, mainly ISIS, but also its capability of being part of the local economy and mastering then large parts of this economy that actually is very flourishing.
Right, right. And Dorcas, just to also find out from the Cameroon and Chad governments, if there's been any statement, any report, or if you seen in your reports there's a position to guarantee stability or security for their own people. Has there been any report or statement?
Yes, there have been reports like that to guarantee safety, but then it's really not working, you know. It's not working like the government claimed that it would work, because we've seen people being, you know, kidnapped day in and day out. We see many people still being kidnapped and people still going back, you know, to join the group.
What were the statements like? Please, if you can just elaborate more. What did the Cameroon government say? What did the Chad government say about trying to stop this problem of insecurity for their own people?
Oh, well, the Cameroon government said that they would fight more. They want the army to be more vigilant, you know, to fight more and to fish out. And they were also telling the local population not to collaborate. If at all they know people who are Boko Haram members, they should denounce them. They should move to the and the government office or a military post and denounce them. Because it's for their own good as well. Remember, there was a reintegration process that happened here in Cameroon. I think it was the first ever in Northern Cameroon where it was also promised that they are going to fight more to see that Boko Haram is brought to its knees with the support of the local population as well.
Right, right. Now, Doctor, as we wrap up our discussion, I don't know if you want to add something to that, also coming from Cameroon and Chad governments, but also just to find out the cooperation between those two countries to stop Boko Haram, equipment, resources. What are they saying?
Exactly. You know, Boko Haram started as a Nigerian problem, but then it became very early kind of transnational and regional threat. So the Lake Chad Basin countries, talking here about Nigeria, Niger, Cameroon, and Chad, as they were already member of the same regional organization that is managing this space they share, talking about the Lake Chad Basin Commission, they actually set a very strong regional cooperation through a regional force called the Multinational Joint Task Force that is actually gathering the different troops of the different countries, each of them in on its own territory to fight Boko Haram. So in the scope of this regional military cooperation, actually, there have been joint operations, but there have also been possibilities for soldiers from Chad, troops from Chad, for example, crossing in Cameroon one or two times to fight together with the Cameroonian troops against Boko Haram. There have also been troops from Chad fighting in Monguno, in Nigeria, in Borno, etc. So there is a, actually, I would say, a very positive collaboration between the different countries because they understood that it's a transnational threat and each of the countries alone actually want to master the fight against a threat that in nature is transnational. And beyond the military agenda, those countries are also together around what they call the regional stabilization strategy. That is the non-military component of the fight against Boko Haram. But then it should be said that nowadays, after more than a decade, you know, of the fight against Boko Haram through this regional collaboration, there are some challenges actually. And one of the main challenges is a kind of fatigue of this regional cooperation. And we saw sometimes ago Niger that actually is stepping out of the multinational joint task force. And this is something that needs to be highlighted because as the threat remains regional in nature, you know, only regional and transnational responses actually can map it. And so it's very important highlighting the importance for the Lake Chad Basin countries that are still together, Nigeria, Cameroon, and Chad, to keeping together and trying as much as possible getting Niger back on the chapter with them.
Dr. Remaji Hoinathi and DW's reporter Dorcas Ekupe, many thanks for joining us.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a vital part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. You can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify and Apple or wherever you get your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Kai Nebe. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
Made for Minds.